Welcome to Betting 360, your number one source for horse racing and sports betting insights. Coming around the bend is your host, David Duffield, with another expert interview to give you the winning edge.
Hi, this is David Duffield, and welcome to another episode of the Betting 360 podcast. We've got Dan Weston back on the line. You may remember him from earlier in the year around the Australian Open time. He's a tennis betting expert, runs the site tennisratings.co.uk, and just lives and breathes it. Spends a lot of time crunching the stats and also watching a lot of games, and contributes to the Pinnacle website as well as an expert analyst. So let's have a chat with Dan. Hey Dan, and welcome back to the show.
Hi Dave, how you doing?
Yeah, really well, thanks. And I just want to get your take on grass court betting and, of course, Wimbledon. Grass is a pretty unique surface. So what's your approach in looking at value bets when it comes to the grass court season?
Well, grass is a completely different surface to the other three surfaces on the ATP Tour, which obviously clay, hard court, or indoor hard. Probably closest to indoor hard in terms of the court speed. So, obviously, grass being the fastest surface on tour, indoor hard being the second fastest, hard being the third fastest, and then clay somewhat fourth. It kind of brings some different tools to the party for players, what they need to be good at. So with grass, serve volley game is kind of a predominant tool, whereas on clay, for example, it's more focused towards baseliners. So you've got a player like Nicholas Mahou, who's got a serve volley game, who's very effective on grass. He'll be a dangerous player in a draw for a seeded player, could cause an upset, for example. So the faster surface does make for some very different conditions. Obviously, big servers are rewarded. They get a lot of 3 points on their serves, a lot of aces, a lot of unreturnable serves. And looking at the stats, on grass on ATP Tour, 82.4% of service games were held in 2013. Now, that's quite a bit up from the 78.6% all surface figure, and that actually drops to the 75s for clay. So you can see that grass has about 7% higher service hold than clay, which obviously being a slower speed and has the biggest discrepancy between the two. Wimbledon, actually, conditions have been on the far side of average in the last couple of years. So in 2013, 83.7% of service games were held, and 83% in 2012. So conditions are going to be likely to be quite fast. Weather's been good in England in the last few weeks as well. Very little rain, so the courts will probably be quite dry. And I don't see that changing, really, in terms of the conditions this year.
And in the past, you've mentioned that at Grand Slam events, the big servers can underperform.
Yeah.
So how do you marry that up against the fact that, you know, having a decent serve on grass can be such a bonus?
Well, it's a tough one. Obviously, I think I still stand correct in that a big server hasn't made it past the quarterfinals, or maybe if you count Janovic at Wimbledon last year, in recent memory. I don't see that changing. The fact that it's a very fast surface with very few service breaks means that the big servers will actually have more variance in their matches, because they're going to be playing a lot of tie breaks, they're going to be playing a lot of one break sets. And obviously those kind of sets are determined on one or two key points a lot of the time. And so the variance for those guys is really high. And you could see someone like John Isner losing like a sort of 6-4, 6-7, 7-6, 7-6 kind of match, like where there's like really, really few breaks, but he's just on the wrong end of a couple of key points. Actually, he does play the key points quite well, but that was just an example that I was using. There's plenty of them. But then by the same token, you've got the likes of him, Ivo Karlovic, who could cause an upset, take sets off big name players because they're not going to drop their serve as much as on other surfaces as well. So looking at a player like Karlovic against a top seed on the handicap betting will probably be quite a good proposition. He's actually got a really good record as an underdog of covering set and game handicaps. So that could be, say he's playing like a top eight player, he's going to be a heavy underdog, but you could probably back him plus like 2.5 sets or something like that to try and nick a set off a high-level player when he's a heavy underdog. But
okay.
sorry, I'm just losing my train of thought a little bit. Sorry. The surface means for the big servers is that they have they won't break barely at all as well. So if we look at the statistics for John Isner on grass in the last sort of 3 years, we're gonna he's quite similar with like the likes of Feliciano Lopez and Karlovic on grass in these sort of conditions. So looking at Isner, he's won 17 out of 22 on grass in the last 3 years, which is highly impressive and better than his overall all-surface average. He's held an incredible 95.3% of the time, but he's only broken 11.9% of the time. So his breaking of opponents is as consistently low as other surfaces. So you can say that he's going to benefit from a lot of free points. Obviously, his service hold is like ridiculously high, but he's not going to break his opponents much either, so he's going to face a lot of tight sets. And that's going to be very symptomatic with the likes of Lopez, Raonic, Karlovic, who are all the big servers on grass. The chances of them playing like a set where it's like more than one break is just absolutely minuscule. And another angle that I've been looking at recently, there's a William Hill, a UK bookmaker. You can't get a lot of money on them, and they will restrict you quite quickly, but there's a bet that they offer which is unique, and it's no service breaks in the first set, and they offer some crazy odds on that. They've really made some big mistakes, and I managed to get 5-1 on Querry Edmund the other day as a no breaks in the first set. I think there was only one break point in the first set which got saved, and that was a good winner. But looking at Isner's stats as well, it's just really interesting. He's won 22 out of 25 tie breaks on grass in the last 3 years, which does show that he has the capability of winning tight matches. However, obviously, playing 4 or 5 sets on a regular basis is going to screw him physically, and that's going to be a big problem. We've seen with Murray at the French Open how 2 5-set matches in the space of 3 or 4 days put pay to any chance that he had against Nadal in the semi-final. And then, obviously, coming to Queens last week, he underperformed at Queens, so it had a real big lasting effect on his physical condition.
And so with that, I can understand why, you know, long rallies on clay and long matches can really take it out of you, but is that still the case on grass? Because I would have thought with some of the big boys, the points are so short that it mightn't be as taxing on the body.
The points are quicker, but it's a hard surface as well, so it's harder on joints than it is on, for example, clay. I think I've done some research recently, and clay had the lowest percentage of retirements out of any surface, and that follows with that, really. The softer surface is going to be easier on the joints. You still, because it's going to be 5 sets, you're still going to be playing long matches. And one other thing, obviously, with Wimbledon as opposed to US Open, US Open, I think, plays tie breaks in the 5th set, whereas, obviously, Wimbledon and the other slams don't. So that's something that's important to know as well. And also, I do believe, I'm 99% sure, that the men's qualifying final round for Wimbledon is best of 5 sets as well, as opposed to other slams, which is best of 3. So that it potentially could fatigue qualifiers as well for their first round matches. That's something that's worth knowing for sure.
Oh, absolutely. It's why you know, you've got a heavy stats-based approach, but you also got to allow for all the changing variables.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, like, back testing the stats for 5 sets was something that I was very keen to do. And again, at the recent French Open, players who won a previous 5-set match in their previous round had a very, very poor win rate in their next round. And I think they were pretty much, well, Murray was the last one who was done and dusted by the semi-final. Like, yeah. So if you can oppose them pretty much full stop, then that's going to be a good strategy, as long as obviously the market hasn't taken consideration into that, which is kind of happening more, I think, now. So I kind of regret writing about it, really, sometimes.
Fair enough. Sometimes you can give away some of your trade secrets. But on the men's side of the draw, you've made note before that the form really holds up and that the elite players dominate. So I think in the last 10 years, there's only been a couple of guys outside the top 5 that have made the final, and only 4 guys have actually won the tournament. So do you expect much the same this year?
I can't see it being any different, to be honest with you. As you say, that it's a very favourite-dominated event, and as if I recall correctly, Wimbledon also has the highest percentage of favourites winning matches compared to other slams as well. So that last year was a real big anomaly there, but on the whole, over a long period of time, that does hold true. And I can't see that changing. Federer's got the best record at Wimbledon. I think he's won 68 out of 75 matches and 6 out of the last 10 events. But I have my real doubts about him in a 5-set format against... he's got no problem against, like, the lower-ranked players or players who are sort of, like, around that sort of top 10 area. But as soon as he ends up playing an elite player, even someone like David Ferrer, he could struggle. David Ferrer could nick an early set against him in a long match. Ferrer will be much the fitter player. For example, like, so he's quite vulnerable physically, I think, in a 5-set match. Now, looking at the underdogs, it's hard really to recommend. I mean, someone like Nishikori, but then he's physically not great in a 5-set, so you could never really look at betting on him as, you know, a future outright for the tournament with a view to trading it or backing his opponent in sub later matches or something like that as a kind of a hedging tool. You couldn't do it. It's difficult. You've got a few players who are dangerous on grass that they could take sets off players like Lopez, Mahu, there's a few others like maybe even Bernard Tomic as well. Leighton Hewitt's always a danger on grass, but it's difficult, really, really difficult to see a player who's outside the top few in the world making a big impact here. Really difficult.
Okay, so amongst the big boys then, so Djokovic is around 280 at the moment. At that price, would you say he's a back or a lay?
I'd say that's fair. I would say it's neither. You've got to massively respect him on grass. He slam wise though, he hasn't really convinced me recently, but he's going to be the main threat and he's justifiably favourite. The other players who have got comparable stats to him on grass is Federer and Murray, but obviously they've got their respective doubts over both. Obviously Federer, like I said, the 5-set issue. Murray with his general fitness, whether he's playing as well now as he did last year, big question mark. I think Djokovic is a reasonable favourite. I don't think that he's bad value or good value, really. I think he's just, that is what he is. I think that's very justified. Players that I am looking to take on are probably Nadal and Wawrinka in individual matches. So,
And why do you want to take on Nadal?
Why? Because his grass record's really poor recently. I'm just going to bring up his stats now.
I think you made note there that has he lost it like 100-1 on the last couple of years?
Yeah, he's lost at let me just put the prices. He's lost at 100-1 on against Darcis and Rossel in subsequent years. And he also lost to Philip Kohlschreiber in Halle in the warm up event in 2012 as well, as a very short price. And then obviously last week he lost to Dustin Brown in Halle as well. But I don't think he maybe put his best efforts in that match particularly. But it just goes to show that he's vulnerable on the surface. Looking at his stats, he's in the last 3 years, he's actually got a lower percentage win rate than John Isner. So he's 63% win rate from 10 wins from 16 matches. He's held 84.6% of the time, broken 22.4%, and that's not elite stats by any means. So for me, he's very vulnerable on grass. Again, that might come down to the fact that he's got the kind of long-standing joint problems, and the surface isn't great for him either in that respect. Looking at his recent history, his 6 defeats all came when he was favourite as well. So actually, in those last 3 years, every single match on grass he's played, he's been favourite for. And his defeats came against Songa, where he was like 3-1 on. Djokovic, when he was slight favourite, at about 8-11. Kohlschreiber when he was 1-7, Rossel 1-100, Darcis 1-100, and Brown 1-5. So he's got big history for losing as a heavy favourite.
And what about Andy Murray then? You mentioned the injury problems, and he's also changed coaches at around the $5 mark. I think he's second favourite. Would you want to be backing or laying?
Well, I think that really comes down to his draw and seeding. I think that it's impossible to say until that point. I think if he's seeded fourth, I don't know how likely that is. Personally, I think that he should be seeded above Wawrinka, but whether they'll stand 2 spots down, I don't know. I think that that's a good possibility for backing him as a future. If he can get to, you know, get to the third or fourth seed, so that he doesn't have to face Nadal or Djokovic until the semi-final, as opposed to potentially in the quarter-final. I think a lot depends on the draw for Murray. That's a big thing for him. And, like, for him as well, I think the other important thing is to get through those first couple of opening games or matches without dropping a set or more than one set. So if you're looking at his recent grass court activity in the last kind of 3 years, just bring it up on the laptop now, his Wimbledon draws, okay. In 2011, he faced Ximena Travere in the first round and Kamker in the second round. He was 1-100 and 1-50 in those first two rounds. Second year in 2012, he faced Davidenko and Karlovic. Davidenko was both games pretty much he was 20-1 on to win, dropped one set against Karlovic. And then last year, he played Becker and Liu, was 100-1 on as well, both matches. So what I'm trying to say is that you take very little risk in that price dropping by waiting for them opening two rounds. So you may as well see how he's playing in those first two rounds. He's winning comfortably, then that would be the time to back him, as opposed to now, before a draw, before those first two matches.
Fair enough. So on to the women's tournament then, and do you want to just start by explaining why there can be more upsets at Wimbledon for women?
Well, there's obviously three sets as opposed to five, so that's a big difference for me. Obviously, having to win two out of three instead of three out of five is a completely different proposition. We've seen in men's matches in slams forever, the underdog going two sets up and losing. Well, in a women's match, that's done and dusted, they've won. So that's why there's more shocks in women's tennis. And obviously the format in women's tennis is exactly the same as the general tour events week in, week out. So that's the main reason why, really. It's just, you know, it's like if you compare it to a snooker match, you know, a general tour event might be best of nine frames for first to five. But then at the Crucible, they have like crazy matches where it's like first to 20 or something like that. And then that gives the better player time to get into a rhythm, to pull back a potential shock early deficit. And that's the reason why women's has more shocks than the men's. I actually think that the bookmakers price up the women's matches quite defensively and probably offer a little bit more value for underdogs than what they do with the men's matches.
Okay. So on the women's side of it, Serena's, I think, around 250 at the moment. She's won three of the last five. Do you think she's anywhere near her best? She probably can't be at her best, but
she's not.
How far is the gap between her and the rest?
Okay. First of all, across all surfaces, and particularly on clay, it's gigantic. It's huge. Like 20-something percent difference in combined hold and break percentages between her and the next best. It's stratospheric. However, her stats have declined in 2014. Of that, there is absolutely no doubt. So if you compare 2013 to 2014, 2013, she lost four matches all year. She held 83.5% and broke her opponent's 53.4%. So in 2014 so far, that 83.5 has dropped to 81, and that 53.4 has dropped to 47.2. So you can see that she's dropped combined hold break about 6-7% in between 2013 and 2014. And already she's lost four matches in 2014 in less than half a year compared to four matches she lost for the whole of 2013. So she's definitely not as imperious as what she was last year. Is she still the player to beat? Absolutely. No doubt about it. But her grass court stats are a lot closer to the rest than on other surfaces. So looking at her grass court record in the last 2 years, her combined hold break percentage is 124.9, whereas you've got someone like Li Na who is 119.3. So that's a lot closer than the 20% differences plus that she has in other surfaces. Also, Sharapova and Kerber also have fairly similar 5-7% deficits on grass as well. And Azarenka actually has better stats, albeit from quite a small sample. But obviously with Azarenka, you don't know how fit she is. Like she lost to Georgie yesterday. She's not fit right now at all. So she's gonna be one player who's going to really need to get some rhythm in the first couple of rounds before before you can really assess how she might play at Wimbledon this year. But there's definitely a much smaller gap between Williams and the rest on grass as there is on other surfaces.
Yeah, and we are chatting before seedings, and obviously the draw is known. So what overall suggestions would you have if people are interested in having a bet right now, or maybe following a player for the first couple of rounds and seeing how they're going? Is there a certain play you'd like to be on, or even is there one that you'd like to take on?
Looking at the odds now, just trying to get the real latest ones up on the laptop right now. We've got I like Kerber at 100-1 before a draw. I really, really like that price. That makes her a bigger price than Muguruza, Lezicki, Stevens, Venus Williams, Ivanovic. So I actually think that she's better on grass than at any other player. That 100-1 actually is a standout price with Sporting Bet right now. 50 everywhere else, and I think that 100, if you can get that on that 100-1, that is a good price on Kerber pre-draw. You can look at her stats. Prior to this season's grass, she was 11-4 on the surface, holding a really impressive 78.3% of the time. Actually is like one of the fourth highest out of the top 20 in the WTA, behind Williams, Azarenka, and Maria Sharapova. And she's broken her opponents 40.1% of the time, which is also well inside the top 10. Combined break hold of 118.4, and that ranks her pretty much similar to Sharapova and Lee. And I really like Kerber as a 100-1 outsider. If you can get on that 100-1 with Sporting Bet, that looks a good price to me.
Fair enough. So if people do want more information on the service that you offer, they may have heard the podcast earlier in the year around the Australian Open time, but how can people get more information about your site and your service?
Well, what I do, on the website, I have daily previews for the matches. That's absolutely free for anybody to look at. So I'll write some trading previews. I'll give my thoughts on a few matches. I specialise, obviously, in game trading, and that's something that I write about a lot. But I also give my opinion on which players I think will win. I put a lot of stats up as well, so that people can make their own judgments. I put a stat of the day up as well. All this is free. And say, you know, I'll say like John Isner has covered like over 9.5 games in X out of Y matches, and but he's available at like 1.6 today to cover that again, and that'll be kind of like a value proposition. So all of that is absolutely free of charge for any visitor, and they can come and have a look at that anytime. And feedback on that's always really welcome. I also offer some services as well, where I've got the daily spreadsheets, which has projected holds for each player, really detailed stats on service holds, service breaks, how often players lose break leads, how often players regain break leads, how often they win, lose break points, how good they are in that situation. Vital notes, like injury notes on each player for that game, head-to-head records, etc. And then I also have a model price for each match as well. So I price up a match myself and then compare it to the market prices. And then that allows users to see how much value that there might be on a player pre-match, either from kind of a betting or trading perspective. I'm also introducing a new product very soon as well, which is going to be hopefully be of great interest to those people who like pre-match betting in tennis. I personally feel that the most value in tennis comes from backing players on the handicap, because the bookmakers tend to derive their odds from starting prices as opposed to player tendencies to cover handicaps. So I think I mentioned earlier in the podcast about Karlovic. So he's quite good at covering handicaps as underdogs. So is Isner actually as well. When they're priced like 5-1 underdog or bigger, they've got good records of keeping matches close at least. And what this new product focuses on is it's going to be a database of how often players cover handicaps. So we're looking at various game handicap lines, various set handicap lines, correct scores, over or under 9.5 games in the first set, etc. And all this is going to be filtered by a price range as well, so you can see how players' tendencies change based on starting prices as well. So, for example, you've got some players who are really, really good at covering handicap lines when they're underdogs, but not so good when they're favourites, for example. That's what the new product's going to focus on. I'm hoping that that's going to be released really, really soon before Wimbledon. So if not, it'll definitely be by the 1st of July. So if anyone's interested in that, I definitely would recommend keeping an eye on the website and joining up the mailing list as well, because I'll email everyone as soon as that's released.
Sounds great. All right, and we'll make sure we link out to that in the show notes. So thanks for joining us again, Dan. Wimbledon snuck up on us in a little way down here. There's just that much sport going on, but everyone's looking forward to it. So really appreciate your time in sharing your information today.
Definitely. Cheers, Dave. Thank you.
Thanks for tuning in to Betting 360. Get more in-depth analysis, tips, and that betting edge by heading over to championpicks.com.au, where you'll find a full transcript of this episode. If you like the show, share us with a fellow punter or drop by iTunes to leave us your thoughts. Betting 360, punting from all angles.